Commissioners, Director Unsworth. Next item, Agenda 11, Wolf Conservation and Management. Real quickly, before I begin this, I wanted to give you just some highlights of what I'll be talking about. I'll be talking about some of the progresses we've made on our current wolf conservation management plan in the recovery phase. And then once I touch on those highlights, we'll switch gears and talk about some planning for wolf conservation and management when wolves have successfully reached their recovery objectives and been delisted. As I start this, the first phase of that about our current wolf conservation management plan, I'm not going to be touching on everything we've done, and there are many things that we still have to work on, but I'm just going to hit some of the highlights. Real quick review, and I'll move fast through this. I know that you folks know this. Just a reminder that the entire state is listed under a commission as state endangered, and the state is divided under federal ESA listing. The western two-thirds are listed as endangered under federal ESA, and the eastern third is federally delisted and has full management authority by Department of Fish and Wildlife except for on federal or tribal lands. Just looking back a little bit when we developed the current wolf conservation and management plan, it was a 5-year process to develop that plan. This is one of those issues that you know is very contentious issue, has a history of very polar perspectives, and requires a lot of time and energy and resources to work through those issues. We did use, this is pre-Wolf Advisor Group. We had a different group, similar, the Wolf Working Group that helped us, provided advice and direction along the way to complete the environmental impact statement and then ultimately the plan. You'll see that, as I said, very comprehensive because of the nature of the issue, 23 public meetings, over 65,000 comments throughout the process of SEPA and writing the plan, peer review, scientific peer review, blind peer review, and then eventually adopted in December 2011 by the commission. So this will come up as we talk about the next planning phase. There are 4 goals in the plan: restoring self-sustaining wolf populations, managing wolf-livestock conflicts, maintaining a healthy prey base, and developing a public understanding and promoting coexistence of wolves. I'm going to touch on some of the progresses in each one of those quickly. So the plan lays out recovery objectives. As you know, we have 3 recovery regions around the state: the eastern region, the North Cascades, and the South Cascades Northwest Coast. The recovery objectives established that we would initiate delisting when we have 15 successful breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years. A successful breeding pair being an adult male and female wolf that produce a litter of pups, and at least 2 of those pups survive from April when they're born to the end of December. So it's a measure of recruitment into the population. So 15 of those distributed, 4, 4, and 4 in each recovery area, and the remaining 3 can be anywhere in the state. Now there's the OR statement, and this, we're going to talk about this. This is important. The OR, 18 successful breeding pair in 1 year. So there's not the repetition of 3 years, and again, 4 in each recovery region, but now 6 anywhere in the state. We'll talk a minute on why that's important. We started with our first pack in 2008. Now we have, I believe, 20 packs, and we've seen this progression of each year, more wolves in the state, more packs. It's a very dynamic process. Our first pack was a lookout pack here in the center part of the state. We still have that pack, but packs, again, being very dynamic, they dissolve, they split into 2, and we've seen all of those things in Washington, very normal wolf ecology. Now, another.
So, in terms of recovery, you know, we talk about the 3 regions. As the plan was put together, was the distribution as it has occurred what was anticipated? And as I look at wolves' recovery across the range, it really appears that the Northern Rockies is their stronghold, and that's where we're seeing our stronghold. In terms of expecting distribution, and now what we've seen with wolf recovery across the range and the stronghold in the Northern Rockies, Are we still, or was this kind of distribution, the way that it's occurring here, expected? I know you've said, yeah, we're sort of on track, but are we going to get to the three regions?
Thank you, Commissioner Thornburg. Good question. I'm confident that we will. You've nailed it. This is a radiation and a growing wolf population that started in three central areas in northwest Montana, Yellowstone, and central Idaho that came together, and that population is now extending out, and we're seeing a wave of recovery radiating out in our state now from east to west, and it will continue. Wolves are great, and you'll see in just a moment. I'm confident in that because they have adequate protections. They're incredibly mobile and are great colonizers. I think we're going to continue to see wolves recolonize those vacant suitable habitats where there's that prey base, and there is more of that in Washington, and make it to the coastal recovery area. It's just that time that it takes for that population to radiate out and reach those areas. And in our modeling that we did in the preparation for the plan, it showed that exact same radiation out from that core area in northwest Montana, Idaho, and Yellowstone. And I wish I did have the map to show that. What you see here in Washington is actually tied to Idaho and northwest Montana. It's one large population if you were to remove all the administrative boundaries. Another way of looking at that, this is actually the locations of all the GPS-collared wolves in Washington on jurisdiction that has Department of Fish and Wildlife, so state land, or not state land, our jurisdiction. So we've clipped out the locations outside of the state or on tribal lands, but it really gives you a good image of where wolves have occurred in Washington. So this is all wolves that have carried a GPS collar, whether they're still out there today or not. And you can see, as we just talked about in that question, they've started with the secure populations in northeastern Washington, and that wave is moving from east to west.
Donnie, is each one of those circles an individual, or just the same one moving around?
It's several individuals. Each circle is just a location of an individual, so we're probably seeing, I'm just guessing now, 20, 30 collared animals right there. And so, just to give you an example, this is the collared animal up in Skagit. These are some animals that came out of Tiana Way, the lookout pack. So it's several animals, all of their locations. So this is everywhere that a GPS-collared wolf has stepped, that we have a location of. And along with that, we also, this is just the known dispersals of wolves leaving packs in Washington. I'm not showing the wolves coming into Washington. There are those also. But my point here is saying that we have a wolf population now that has reached that stage where it is also a source. We have, of course, wolves coming into the state from neighboring areas, and we have production in this state, and now we're becoming a source. So this just shows you this is just the dispersing animals wearing collars, which is just a fraction of the population. Imagine the dispersing animals that are not collared that I can't show you here.
A model was used. This data does not make me confident. Because it looks like the dispersal in the Northeast is dispersing in the Northeast. It's not dispersing to the Southwest.
True. True. From those before me and the real boots on the ground, the biologists that have studied wolves for their whole careers, and the experience even Director Unsworth in his previous job, wolves are great colonizers. I don't believe that I-90 is going to prevent wolf dispersal. We've seen, think about OR-7 out of Oregon and the habitats and the roads that animal covered. Think about another media attention on a wolf that left the Northern Rocky Mountain ecosystem, went all the way down to Grand Canyon. They are very mobile and great colonizers. And so there is an anticipation building. Some folks are anxious and waiting for that first pack south of 90, but still, with what we see today, we're still expecting that to happen.
And In the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, they cross I-75.
But to even help answer Jim's question, the wolves that we have in our area didn't come out of Northeast. They came up out of Oregon.
But that's exactly my point.
Well, but there again, back to Donnie's point, of OR-7 spent a night on my place, literally, and he ended up in California. So I think to bolster what Donnie's trying to say, there's a pile of wolves to the south of me in Oregon, and they are dispersers down there in that Mnaha pack, and they've gone west into Oregon. So, yeah, are they going to come out of the northeast? Maybe, maybe not. But there's wolves that Donnie isn't showing down in Oregon, too, that will help fill that hole.
And these are just GPS collar locations. We have detected wolves in this area. We've detected a wolf in Klickitat County. So there is some documentation of that. And, you know, to give you a sense of the kinds of barriers they can get through, we've also, you know, documented wolves swimming Lake Chelan. And so they can get through those barriers. I think that there will be, a sense of a surety that we're still on the path towards recovery when we do get that first pack south of 90. So you've seen these before. In terms of the growth of the population, so we're talking about it geographically and numerically. We're seeing the minimum number of wolves increase in the state. We're at that stage now where they're not as rare. It's a robust, resilient population. It's a source population. And we'll talk a minute about the next phase of recovery and the speed of which that may occur. We're seeing on average of all these years about a 30% growth rate per year, consistent with very similar to what they saw in the Northern Rocky Mountains, very similar to what they're seeing in Oregon. So again, as kind of we expected. And it's that same pattern whether you look at the minimum number of wolves or the minimum number of packs. There are more wolves and more packs than what we know of and we're describing here because we're in a growth phase, 30% per year. If we flash back to the slide about the metric we're using towards recovery objectives, a successful breeding pair, this is what that looks like. Again, increase. We already talked about we have wolves coming in probably more so from our neighbors to the east, Idaho, Northwest Montana, but also from BC and also from Oregon. It's that wave of recovery from east to west. And so here's what that looks like in terms of the metric for recovery. So recall that it's 15 over 3 years or 18 in 1 year, 4 in each recovery area. So this is the 3 recovery areas. In 2016, so last time this year, we had 8 in the eastern area, 2 of the 4 in the North Cascades, and 0 in the South Cascades Northwest Coast, that wave of recovery east to west. It also is, so it's 4, 4, and 4, and 3 anywhere in the state. So this is where I expect we're going to hit 18 in a single year first, because by the time we get 4 here, we'll have more than 4 here, and we'll likely have more than 4 in the North Cascades. So I don't hold me to this. This is not a projection, but my thought is that we'll probably reach the 18 in a single year first because of this pattern that we're seeing. Switching gears now to the next goal in the recovery plan, and I think I probably have to talk faster. As you know, we've talked about before, one of the things Washington has done is trying to get ahead of wolf-livestock conflict in terms of being as proactive as it can to prevent conflict before it happens. And so we put a lot of effort and energy and worked with stakeholders. We have a variety of things to help put those proactive non-lethal tools on the landscape. And this is to help communities adjust to this new carnivore on the landscape. And, you know, one of the things that's in our plan that we've talked about before is we envision and we manage for the coexistence of wolves and livestock, both of those. And so community vitality and financial stability of our communities is important to us. And so, you know, some of the things you've seen over the past couple years is damage prevention cooperative agreements, contracted range riders, the informal kinds of things, checklists, collaboration over the kitchen table, over the hood of the truck. And you can see in the chart here that the uptake of those proactive deterrence measures is increasing, and that's a good thing, actually increasing at a rate more than our wolf population. And so we're seeing the uptake of those tools. We've also established, working with stakeholders, the compensation program that we just talked about. It includes compensation for direct losses, the tax on livestock that result in injury or death, and it also the compensation for indirect losses, greater than normal losses, reduced pregnancy rates, reduced weight gain. We've established a livestock review board to help us review those indirect claims, and we've had two claims and paid both of those. And to date, we've paid just over $100,000 in 6 years of time. That doesn't represent all the losses. There are some that don't choose not to submit a claim if they have livestock damage. And I recall a colleague sharing that don't view compensation as always goodwill. There are some folks out there that they're very livestock producers are independent people, and compensation is okay for some and not for others. And then, of course, our protocol. You know the history here. I'm going to move fast through this one, but feel positive about the progress we've made on the protocol. We've had a rocky start in the early years. We've invested in working through social conflict, the conflict transformation process. We've reached a point where we've reconciled relationships with stakeholders and stakeholders to stakeholders have, and we're able to have those difficult conversations and work through issues and find cohesion on things. And again, that's a good thing. This is good for the public because it also allows for the public consistency and clarity on how we manage wolf-livestock conflict and our interactions in this state. The third goal, maintaining a healthy prey base. So in terms of the prey base, and I already touched on the ungulate assessment that's recently out, for population objectives, management priorities, and monitoring, I know you've heard about those things every year from our game division. Those are established in our game management plan, our specific elk herds, our herd plans, our mule deer and white-tailed deer plans. We monitor ungulate populations every year. That information is available in the game status and trend reports annually. And then, of course, the harvest information is also available. All of these being available to the public set the stage for our objectives, our management priorities, our monitoring, and ultimately our hunting seasons. So from an assessment standpoint, one of the things we want to do is we want to be able to, if there are impacts on ungulate populations, be able to detect those. And so that's partly our annual surveys that we do every year for ungulates. We did a ungulate assessment that was more of a presentation in 2015. I talked about the one that was just complete that is a little more comprehensive, but again, it's limited on the data it was used. The other side, the right side of this slide, is a little deeper dive into data, actually designing research projects around that question and do a better job of actually looking at that. And so the goal here is to try to get baseline information, and if we do see predation, with wolves being a part of it, impacting ungulate populations, that we're aware of that and can manage for that. And then moving on to the last goal, develop a public understanding and promote coexistence. We've done a number of things here to try to progress on this one. I remember 2 years ago reporting to you that this is one that we have felt like we've made the least progress on. I've reported also more recently that I'm feeling better about that now, that we are starting to, I think, make some progress there and be able to work in a through a good process with our stakeholders. And I'm not going to go through this list. I know you can look through there and see that, but I will touch on the very first one. And we formed internally a wolf internal group that's a cross-section, both vertically and horizontally in the department. And I think that's a value because it gives us an opportunity. We're as diverse as our society. And it gives us an opportunity to put our collection of thoughts together and work through issues so that when we interact with the public, whether it's a conflict specialist or district bio or regional manager or any of us, it's a consistent message and they get the same information. If it's inconsistent, that just confuses our public. Some key points here. We're going to continue implementing our current plan, of course. Continue the collaborative process that we are doing with stakeholders. We expect the wolf population to continue to grow numerically and geographically. The modeling that we talked about a minute ago roughly suggests that we may be getting close to those recovery objectives by 2021, plus or minus a couple of years. Again, not a prediction, just modeling doesn't tell the truth. It's just some insights. So that takes us into the last part of this presentation. That is, we believe it's time to start planning for how we conserve and manage wolves when they successfully reach recovery objectives and are delisted. So some thoughts on that, and we're just putting our thoughts together on this and wanted to interact and engage with the commission and, of course, with the public, is engage a wide and diverse cross-section of Washingtonians. An inclusive process that includes the diversity of perspectives, cultures, worldviews. We want to take the diversity of all of us Washingtonians and get it in the room the best that we can. We envision a process that has community involvement. And all of that, with the sufficient time and resources, you saw my second or third slide about this is not a light undertaking. This is has a history of being a contentious issue. So we want to make sure we start with enough time that we have the time and resources needed, but still have our conservation management plan for post-delisting before we actually get to that stage. We also envision, as we're learning about the social conflict side of this, I often say that wolf conservation management is often more about the people than about the wolves. We're wanting to integrate kind of the CEPA process that we traditionally use, obviously, for planning, but also with the conflict transformation process. And so just quickly a little more related to that, and I'm just kind of sketching here the CEPA process, and I'm not going to go through that, but applying the standard CEPA process we do for EIS documents and integrating that throughout the process, the reconciling the relationships, the inclusivity and diversity, the mutual learning. You often hear sometimes that comment that for folks to really get behind something and own it, they have to build it. And so really using the conflict transformation process intertwined with CEPA as we move forward in this planning process. So we'll continue to engage with you all, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, with our Wolf Advisor Group and the public. We're at that stage right now for process considerations, design, thinking about desired outcomes, developing a timeline, and then soon to initiate this integrated CEPA conflict transformation approach. That's all I have. If you have any questions.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Donnie. That was great, and it eases my mind of where we're headed. Can you go back to slide 4, I think it was? Way back. Yes. When my daughter went off to college, I told her a couple of words of advice, don't get a boyfriend. And because you can't mess up your studies. But also, if you have an important test, start way ahead of it to plan for it and study for it. And that's how I feel about this. We need to start way ahead. And I'm glad to hear that you're saying this. The Wolf Plan, I think it's an excellent document. It was started in 2007. Some of the key authors are here. Thank you, Harriet. And it wasn't adopted until 2011. 4 years. I don't know if this will be as big a process of that, but I want to state for the record that we are not Idaho, we are not Montana. We have a much more diverse population of hunters, anglers, ranchers, conservationists, wildlife watchers. It's going to take some time to get into this process and get all those opinions and get something that I think can be done. I really believe it can be done. But when I look at this, you have a 17 citizen member wolf working group, and I remember those meetings, and there were meetings of the commission that took 7 hours, 200 people testifying. I was kind of telling Dave Grable the other night, I said, you don't quite understand how much work that was. That was a tremendous amount of work, but we came out with an excellent product, that was unanimously supported by the full commission. The amount of public meetings, the scientific peer review, I really have faith that we can find a way through this to have even a better outcome than some of our surrounding states. So I'm really glad to hear that you are heading this way. I guess I have a couple of questions. One is, do you envision this to become as a task of the current Wolf Advisory Group or a separate process? And also, along those lines, what do you think is the starting point? Where do you envision this actually taking off?
Excellent questions, Commissioner. We would like to engage the Wolf Advisory Group on this. We want to reach into communities and Washingtonians in as many ways as we can. And so we are approaching the Wolf Advisory Group and asking them to make this their next task. It's a go slow start, and I've learned what that means, and that means don't get ahead of ourselves. Work through those early issues with the stakeholders on design and desired outcomes and all of those things, so that we can kind of get an assessment of what people or the diversity of us are thinking. And so we're going to start that process. We're getting ready to schedule the next Wolf Advisory Group meeting. I also envision this being, because the nature of this issue, and you recall back to the time this plan was developed, we need to try to reach as wide of audience as we can and really try to get that input and engagement from as many people and as many communities in Washington as we can, because there's some really important issues for us to talk about.
Real quickly. And I don't think this is something the commission can hand off. I mean, I think we have to be roll up our sleeves and be engaged as well. So I'm interested to see as this develops how we'll interface with the WAG and play our role that's going to be equally as important to get that public input and get this out in front of folks as it goes through a SEPA process. I'm envisioning, I guess, kind of a dual process or however this works out, but we cannot hand this off.
Yes.
And I agreed with everything that this knucklehead just said.
We do that.
Yeah, that's often. But one thing that you briefly mentioned on earlier is the paper that was submitted to us here a couple weeks ago about words matter. And granted, there's probably only about two people on the commission when that was all written. No, probably three of you. But there were some commitments made, and I do feel that we need to live up to some of the commitments. And like you said, you briefly touched on it. You may expound on it a little more. I don't know how many on the group have read through it, but there was a lot to be said in that paper.
Yes, Commissioner. We just got a response back to all those groups today. I think they did a good job of highlighting areas that we've in the white paper that had a lot in it, in over a dozen pages. They really documented some areas that we made progress and some areas that we didn't make as much progress that still need attention. And so, we've got two tasks in front of us. We're not going to slow down on implementing the current plan, but we also need to get going on planning for when wolves successfully reach recovery objectives. It's encouraging, though, that the part where in that particular correspondence, the letter from those six entities, that they also envision a stakeholder process with a diversity of folks at the table, and they, as they said in their words, stand ready to engage in that. And so that's what we envision as well, multi-stakeholder, very diverse and inclusive process.
So just quickly, looking for some assurance here, we've heard over and over that the current plan was hard won, lots of hours, very good plan. There's also rumors that there are thoughts of reopening the current plan in advance of a post-delisting plan. But I think I heard you say that that's not what we're considering. We're considering planning for post-delisting, planning on how to develop that new plan, and we aren't looking currently at reopening the plan we have. Is that right?
I'm really glad, Commissioner Baker, you asked that question. It was me that probably started the rumors. When we first were having this conversation, I think it was almost 2 years ago, actually, we wanted to be soft about it and say, we didn't know at that time, are we talking about a hybrid plan that could include a period of time before they successfully reach recovery objectives and maybe a period of time that afterwards? So a hybrid in that respect, or are we talking about a truly a post-delisting conservation management plan? At the stage we're at now, and to reach back and open up the current plan and all of those issues, I would be deeply concerned that we couldn't complete the product by the time we reach recovery objectives. And so from that perspective, we're really talking about at this stage in time, continuing on implementing our current Wolf Conservation Management Plan and starting the work for when they successfully reach recovery objectives. And so that's the difference, and I think we do have to get that message out. Thank you. Thank you very much.